Hale Varsity Magazine presents the Hale Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hale Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better.
We get beat,
beat. We get beat,
beat. Boom, beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you on a Wednesday. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Jay Moore, Blackshirt Husker NFLer, still on assignment at Augusta National. I don't want him to bring his cheese sandwich back. I know cheese keeps for a while, but that's a big ask. Mike Babcock will talk Husker football and baseball with us in 20 minutes. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, Mr. PGA, Husker Golf, Shuey, back from Mexico. And we'll talk Masters and, of course, Nebraska coming up in about 40 minutes. And then Cedric Golden will spend some time with us talking spring football. A lot of thoughts. I have some on the latest Football Power Index for 2017, and it's a Dirty Bob Wednesday. We can call, this is not the first time we've used the term Dirty Bob. It's a term of endearment for his defenses because they're filthy. All right? Nebraska defense, Bob Diaco. Thoughts from him on practice. Later on in the show, can join us 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Want to join us and tap the line, brought to you by your friends at Chilling Bridge Cork and Tap House. Do so on Twitter at Hale Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, at TJ underscore Henning. Also on the ESPN 1480 Facebook page, can chime in there, and the ESPN 1480 app. So a lot to get to. Shall we start with the Football Power Index? This is
away from ledges.
This
Husker
is
fans.
Glorious every April. I mean, the timing of this is superb.
Mm-hmm.
You drop in right before a team's spring game and see how frustrated or joyous a fan base can be. Let me ask you this. As a Nebraska fan, is it more of an insult, a harsh reality, or kind of somewhere in between? How offended do you get anymore as a Nebraska football fan when you read The Doubt up on ESPN.com? Have you accepted it? Now that you accept this projection, which we'll get to if you haven't seen it or read it. Usually I have to borrow TJ's double secret code to get into the insider. But, okay, Football Power Index, don't glaze over. I'm just setting up the parameters as how they input info and then spit it out. Okay, your Football Power Index rates your team's strength, and it's a predictor of performance. Okay. Schmidt goes to the bar Friday night, has a 7 a.m. wake-up call for a Hale Varsity Weekend Edition. You can predict my performance. It's going to be a heavy lifting day for Kranak and TJ. I don't go to the bar on Friday nights anymore. Okay, just painting that example. Okay, how many points above average or below average a team is? These projections are results based on 10,000, that's 10,000, simulations of the regular season. And that is looking at schedule and then the ratings. Kind of on it. I mean, they put some work into this. Do you have a number in mind? Where should Nebraska be going into? This is where they'd finish based off 10,000 simulations on how the season will play out. And this is what they came up with. Nebraska, drum roll please, is the 58th best team in college football in 2017. Do not shoot the messenger. Nebraska, at best, through these 10,000 simulations, we'll go 6-6, maybe 5-7. Now, if you're honest, you can see that happening. It's DEFCON 2, worst case scenario, oh my God, but you can see it happening. You can, I mean, listen, let's just add up why it could happen.
Yeah.
Why it could happen. Defensive transition, new quarterback, beat up or ineffective offensive line. The stress level fishbowl of this place, where if you don't win by enough, people are upset. And if you don't win enough, people are upset. And they'll be vocal about it. And quite honestly, every move during spring is watched. And it's watched by, there's only 1.8 million in the state. Well, there's a lot more around the country. It's intense. And that's what makes you great. So, I look at 6-6, and it'll be total freakout mode. And if it is 6-6, that means you've lost to the following. Dum dum dum. Oregon, you can see it. Wisconsin, you can see it. Ohio State, you can see it. Northwestern. That's still, it's hard to say, even though they've done it.
Mm-hmm.
They've won in Lincoln a lot. You lose at Minnesota. I'm sorry, but if I got to hear this row the boat crap raining down in November.
That will be annoying, even though I'm a PJ Fleck guy.
But I know you're a PJ Fleck guy, but enough. Stay up in the land of 10,000 lakes. At Penn State, I can see it. And then you lose to Iowa, maybe. It's one thing to lose. It's another to have winning percentage attached to these games. And they give, the ESPN.com College Football Power Index gives Nebraska, after 10,000 simulations, all right, a 14.4% chance to beat Oregon. Listen, I think Oregon probably wins that game, but they're in some transition, too.
Yeah.
They give Nebraska a 17% chance at home against Wisconsin. Hornibrook didn't... No, let's pick a quarterback that tortured Nebraska.
It's not Russell Wilson.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. He and Russell Wilson... And they have a new defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
This hasn't seemed to matter. Maybe the Wisconsin way is the ultimate show of faith. We'll get into Big Ten rankings after this Nebraska breakdown. Ohio State, they give Nebraska a 5% chance to beat Urban in Lincoln. That's really, really low. But I wouldn't bet against Ohio State.
No.
They give Nebraska a 37% chance at home against Northwestern, a 40% chance on the road at Minnesota, a 7.3% chance at Penn State. Nebraska's 2-0 the last time they've gone to Unhappy Valley. They give Nebraska a 42.9% chance to beat Iowa in Lincoln. So by the time November rolls around, they are figuring either your quarterback's been beaten up, your defense has said screw it, your offensive line's in shambles, and the heat is too hot.
Yeah. Yeah, losing out in November.
And by the time you go to November, it is duck and cover because the season's lost. You've lost to Northwestern. Why the hell put any effort up against Minnesota or Penn State or Iowa? You lose out. You lose out in November.
I think it was just like a week or two ago, we were projecting our worst-case scenario for Nebraska, and I went with 6-6 or 5-7, and that's what FBI is projecting as just the average. Not the worst or the best, but average.
That's their
so
average.
That's like making
that's
me...
That's half of the... That's 5,000 of the 10,000 simulations.
So that's making me really rethink my worst-case scenario for Nebraska.
Listen, maybe this is afterglow of 10 practices. Maybe this is too much Diaco for me, and maybe this is me being wowed by quarterbacks that are throw first guys.
Mm-hmm.
I'll grant you the O-line's got some work to do.
Yep.
I'll grant you dudes are trying to figure out where they go in coverage on this defense. And I'll grant you that maybe that they're not physical enough in the run game right now. The question is, are they going to be? But I don't see them losing these coin flip games. Are they going to lose to your favorites? Maybe. But are they going to lose to teams that they're at the level of or in some areas, at least on the recruiting pieces of paper that are handed out better than? And I know they've lost in the past to Minnesota and Northwestern. I just don't see them doing it again.
Yeah, I think games like Oregon, which maybe not be a coin flip, but how are you only a 14? How do you only have 14% chance? Why isn't that more like mid-30s or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, what's Oregon got?
Yeah.
Other than, I mean, Freeman will be back. I mean, it's going to be a totally different offense, different system. I mean, Oregon could be okay. Nebraska ranks, per the FPI index, destined for a 6-6 season, and they're number 58 in the country. There's, what, 60? Let me scroll down here. Power 5 teams. Well, they don't. Roughly, there's probably
it's about 68
Power 5 teams, right?
Out of 130.
Right. So Nebraska is 10 from worst. Okay. The rest of the Big Ten breaks down like this. They have Minnesota ranked as a 55th in the country, 6-6. They have Iowa 39th at 7-5. Northwestern 29th at 8-4. Michigan at 17th, 8-4. I think Michigan opens up with Florida this year. And then you have Wisconsin. God, they love Wisconsin.
They do.
They think Wisconsin's either 10-2 or 11-1, 10th in the country. Now, they don't play Ohio State, Michigan, or Penn State. Then they have the Buckeyes going 12-1. History says after Urban gets spanked in a bowl game or on a national stage, he comes back and wins a national title, which he did at Florida and he did at Ohio State. I want no part of Ohio State this year because they're going to be angry. And their front seven is going to be disgustingly good.
Yeah.
But back to Nebraska. I don't see... God, this is too soon to like plant my flag. I don't see them going a screw it, I don't care, 6-6. They may be 7-5. But I would venture to say they'll be in every game, and the games they lose will be between 14 and 17. Why? Why can I say that in April? Save this and let's play it back in December. Because I think you've got a culture that is shifting for the good, and that's defensively. They still got to make tackles, make plays, understand, communicate. They got to do a lot. But they care. They didn't look like they cared last year. Towards the end of the year, post Wisconsin. Every time I say post Wisconsin, we're going to start a new rule. I'm going to put some sort of monetary donation into a Wisconsin jar. Beer and pizza for you at the end of summer.
Deal.
Because that's, you like food and orange soda. I know you're not a beer guy. Listen, I will say with a straight face that the culture and attitude is going to be the difference, not only in winning some games, but staying in some games. And at some point last year, these guys tuned out their then defensive coordinator and didn't really care about playing for him or some teammates. I think that's very true. Not all, but some. And you need all 11 plus some key reserves on a defense. These guys want to get better, want to play better, want to be dominant. And I think they will. I think they, when I say dominant, I think they'll be good enough to assist and not be a detractor. I feel good. And I think the offense will come along. I mean, it just, I'll get back to you on the offensive line. I will get back to you on the offensive line, but from a preseason football index, Nebraska's 58th. You're pretty much... Listen, it hurts, it stings, it's a bee sting, But until they do something, I think a lot of you as Nebraska fans are, yeah, it could happen. Mm-hmm. You've accepted the fate of it could happen. You're not going to be pleased with it. You still have high expectations. You still want them to be contending for a championship. But
Vogel set the over-unders for 7.5 a week ago on the HailVarsity.com website, and I would agree with that. But after seeing this, I wonder when the Vegas ones come out, the official ones, if it would be like more like 6.5 now.
I think the Vegas, well, the Vegas odds we'll get to are out for a national championship standpoint.
Yeah, but I just mean like over-under for win
over. Yeah, that might be a little bit later on. Can log on, HailVarsity.com. It's not a football power index, but it is the State of Husker Nation poll that you have a chance to cast your vote, share your voice through Monday, I believe, and some important questions you can answer. Take our survey with HailVarsity.com. The Football Power Index has Nebraska at 6-6, maybe worse, and number 58. Does that hack you off, or are you in show-me mode, prove-it mode with this team? A lot of question marks, but sometimes question marks aren't a bad thing. Mike Babcock will talk football and Husker baseball next on Hail Varsity.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Cedric Golden coming up less than an hour. And Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment on the way. His thoughts on the Masters. As Mike Babcock shortly on Hail Varsity Radio, we're talking ESPN.com's preseason football power index. Does that get you hot? Not in that way, but angry. With Nebraska being a projected 6-6 team. 6-6. They are way down the trough in the Big Ten. Well, we'll see if we get Babbers here on the horn. I'm having all sorts of internet interaction issues. Did we forget to feed the meter in the back room on the internet? This is gorgeous. I'm 4 feet from a router. Your tweet cannot be sent. All right. Bob Diaco is very engaging and very honest with his post-practice thoughts. We'll have some of those for you from yesterday. More practice thoughts tomorrow from Coach Langsdorf. And Mike Shewhart will give us his thoughts on the Masters. And maybe Shuey also possibly rode with a live tiger this weekend. I'm anxious to hear about that. I want to remind you about drunk driving. Don't do it, first of all. If you're out with friends and someone offers you a ride home, but you say no because you think you're okay to drive, mixing alcohol and driving, never a good thing for anyone. You can take a life, can lose yours. You can be arrested, go to jail, lose your license, pay fines, and legal fees. Any way you look at it, you drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Department of Roads and Highway Safety Office. So we'll find Babbers here in a little bit. Cedric Golden on the way. Let's talk a minute or two here about some of the other Big Ten love with this Football Power Index. Ohio State comes in 12-1. That isn't a shock. They're a favorite. Bama 10.5. They're saying Bama probably an 11-2 season. Oklahoma also an 11-2. They have Florida State around, we'll say 11-2, 11-3-ish. They're high on Auburn. They're high on LSU. Clemson, a 9-3 season. That's more common after a national championship run. Penn State, listen, the ecstasy of being up 20 and then losing at the buzzer.
Yeah.
But gosh, the future's bright for Penn State. McSorley and Barkley, and their tight end that's 8 feet tall, and their defensive line's good. Okay, you tell me this. Would you put money down that SC is going to be in the top five, let alone top three every year? I shouldn't say every year. This year, preseason.
Coming into this season, yes, I would.
Right?
Yep.
They have SC finishing behind Washington, behind Stanford. That's hilarious. They have SC going 9-3, maybe 9-4. Babers says to try his hard line. Do you have that? No? That's awesome. Okay. So there we have that. So for all this love and hype on SC, they're second, third fiddle in the Pac-12. Here's the other thing I wonder about. Big things are wanted for year three with Mike Riley. Obvious. How about Jim Harbaugh? How's Harbaugh going to deal with an 8-4 year? That'd be interesting. That'd be super interesting. Because the guy's getting like $9 million a year, it seems like. You get $9 million, then you don't win a Big Ten championship. You don't win a Big Ten championship. You make that amount of money. You lose to Ohio State again, presumably in crushing fashion. And you're 10-3, but I'm still Jim Harbaugh, and you're not. Biggest thing with him is what he's got to replace. Walked into a pretty loaded and fertile situation cupboard-wise at Michigan. Does he handle that appropriately? And the thing about Harbaugh is he just doesn't care. You don't like what I'm doing? Fine. I will go to the NFL and wear somebody else out. So the Football Power Index, full of surprises. How accurate are they? What I should have done is find a way to look at last year's projections and then see how they ranked to the reality of last year. I think they had Nebraska around 7 or 8 wins last year. And Nebraska ended up with 9. We welcome in author, historian, Hall of Famer, and with Hale Varsity, 39 years and counting, covering Nebraska. Mike Babcock with us at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, how we doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. And I was just thinking, if you ran analytics at halftime of the Super Bowl, what would you have come up with in terms of would the Falcons win that game?
You would have come up with put the house, the farm, the apartment building, the mortgage, and the dog on Atlanta.
Yes, yes. All I'm saying, I'm fascinated by that stuff that you've been talking about. I think it's really interesting, but you also have to take into account the human element, and they're numbers, and it's the cliche, but that's why they play the games. That's the bottom line.
It is, and I think schedules are a part of this. I'm anxious to see how teams respond to it. I mean, if I'm Nebraska and you're in this transition, I blow this thing up and I put that 10,000 simulations ... says this. I mean, they're internally motivated. They're motivated for themselves, their family, their teammates. But never hurts to have a little extra bulletin board, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I understand. I mean, as we've talked, I mean, basically it's a reset for Mike Riley in his third year because you've got a new defense. You've got a new offense to some extent because now you don't have Tommy Armstrong Jr. You're not accommodating his skills. You're doing the system that you wanted. And you're handling special teams differently. So in his third year, it's a reset. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me that the perception would be that way. The question is, how well does Nebraska adapt to these different things? And the spring is a time for optimism, so be optimistic about it, regardless of what the numbers say.
That's the thing. You look at 6-6, and it's hard to be optimistic. I think Nebraska fans are numb to this by now. I mean, they've had 7, 8, 9 years of out of sight, out of mind. From a national perspective, I mean, locally, obviously, you're locked into it, but nationally, Babbers, it's Nebraska it's in full 1,000% prove it mode to the folks nationally, and with whatever type of equation they put together to spit this thing out 10,000 times, for the average being 6-6.
Well, yeah, but and the numbers you're putting in there are based on the fact that Nebraska hasn't won a conference championship since 1999 and has been in the conference championship game
once.
Since then, four times.
Mm-hmm.
Once
in the Big Ten.
Callahan. Yeah, once in the Big Ten. Once under Callahan, three under Bo. And the Big Ten once is a forgettable once.
No kidding, right? That also helps those whiskey boys with another coordinator. Forget about it. You're okay. You're Wisconsin. And so you're going to be an 11-win juggernaut again because of how Barry's built you. Let's talk a minute about Husker baseball. Impressive win last night. Ben Miller's rocking. Schreiber was good. And the bat's really alive. You have another opportunity against UNO tonight. Minnesota's tops in the league, but Maryland is looming, who you're tied with in the conference. Babers, give me a rundown here, a pulse on this baseball team as they make their way through another week.
Well, I think that the Huskers are, you know, showing some consistency. That's what we've talked about, and that's been the concern, I think, is a consistency factor. And obviously last night, Darren Erstad was happy. He got three innings out of Ben Miller because they're scuffling a little bit in the bullpen because now they don't have Reese Edens. Zach Engelken looks like it's going to be a medical redshirt for him. It's not quite what they thought they would have. So going into the game, they expected two innings out of Miller. He gave him three. They were happy with that. He's starting to hit. That's the thing that's really, I think, significant. And the one thing that, last night they were able to overcome is they're still, the pitchers still go through stretches where they walk too many. And that you can't have that. And that's been a problem for the Huskers. So you get away from that. You get a guy like Ben Miller starting to hit. You know, Jake Myers is hitting now. He's up around 300 finally. He started slowly. I think, again, as I've said every time, the pieces are there. But we'll know a lot more after the Maryland series, because I think Nebraska has to play well against Maryland. Doesn't play Michigan in the regular season. Those are the two teams that are have some national ranking recognition. Although Minnesota's off to a good start, and its schedule is favorable. So Nebraska needs to play well this weekend.
Babers, about 60 seconds. Any concern with tonight? I know the RPI Association's not great for UNO. You just beat your rival, and you did it soundly and impressively. Just kind of reading some of the postgame comments, Erstad seemed a little worried about getting too big ahead with this one.
Well, yeah. Omaha is, 6-21, so it's a, you know, I think a trap game is kind of the way Erstad said it, but coming off what you did against Creighton, you're feeling pretty good about yourself. Nebraska, it should be a replay of last night. Omaha has not played all that well, but we'll see if the Huskers can focus there and get ready for the weekend. That's again, that's really an important series for the Huskers, Maryland.
Mike, about 20 seconds. What's coming up with Hail Varsity?
We're actually kind of got double duty here. We're starting to work on the yearbook as well. So,
oh, sweet.
We got that State of Husker Nation poll that I hope people will be participating in. We've gotten good response so far. That'll be interesting. And that, you know, there's numbers right there. That'll be interesting.
That'll be outstanting. State of Husker Nation poll through Monday. HailVarsity.com. Babers, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it.
Hey, great talking to you.
Awesome stuff. Mike Babcock all over Husker baseball. Thoughts on Husker football and the human element. Don't discount it. We're planning on the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment shortly. Hail Varsity continues.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HailVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Jay Moore is wearing a raincoat right now in the, merchandise tent, I would bet. It is the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, wildernessridgegolf.com, 402-434-5106. I haven't talked to Ken Shimmick, but I'm betting that it's going to be 75 and awesome Sunday. If you're not at youth baseball, like some of us will be, get to Wilderness Ridge, membership benefits, membership pricing, and see the pros there. Of course, Chris Thompson and our dear friend, Director of Instruction, Mike Shuhart. Shuey is back from Mexico. Ready to talk Masters and Husker Golf. Shuey, how are you?
I'm good. I made it back.
Did you ride in the golf cart with the Tiger?
No, I didn't get up and close to the Tiger.
Is there a picture and proof?
So
I believe you.
I'll get you one. I'll get you one. I will.
What's the Tiger's name?
You know, they actually have seven of them there.
There's seven Tigers roaming around the golf course to help your nerves with the important golf putts.
Yeah, I learned a lot. I learned a couple things down there. They have seven Tigers on property.
Yeah. And you were at El Tigre with Husker Golf this weekend.
El Tigre,
right?
Yep. And then it is the largest sanctuary for Tigers since it opened. They've had over 70 some Tigers there that they keep in captivity.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So there's seven just chilling?
Yeah, they got them. They're in cages, obviously, but you can get right up close to them, man. You can walk right next to them. You can almost pet them if you want to take that chance. You might lose an arm, but they're pretty impressive animals. They're pretty cool.
That's so good. So you petted one?
No.
No?
Could have, but
okay.
I'm like,
you're like,
I don't think I should be doing
all
that.
Right. That's all right. Well, how'd the squad do? Tell me about it.
We had our ups and downs. We started really poorly, but we finished really, really strong.
Those Tigers.
So I think they were a little jet lagged or something, but we didn't have a very good first round, but we ended strong. We played really well the last round. We shot like the second or third low round of the day, and I had a girl finish tied for fifth, had only three shots out, so she had a very legitimate chance to win the tournament. So a lot of good positive things, which is good. Hopefully we can carry that into, you know, conferences in 2 weeks. So hopefully they can take that round that they played and take it into conference and surprise somebody.
Apply it. That's important to Mike Shuhart with us here on Hale Varsity Radio, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Okay, let's talk Masters.
Oh, yeah.
And it is that time of year, the tradition unlike any other. And here is what I need to tell you that's about, 10 minutes old from ESPN.com. Dustin Johnson falls downstairs in rental home, hopeful he can play the Masters. Took a serious fall down the staircase on the eve of the Masters. David Winkle said in an email, that's Johnson's email agent, that he fell on the stairs of his rental home. He landed hard on his lower back and is resting with discomfort. The injury is muscular. That's the word from ESPN's Tom Rinaldi. And Johnson taking anti-inflammatory icing injury. Your reaction?
Wow. Yeah, that's a big-time news right there, because the way he's been playing, he is odds-on favorite going into the event. So with that, that's going to be a tough one, especially with what it sounds like conditions weather-wise. You know, today it's raining down there. They pulled people off the golf course. They didn't play the par three. It's supposed to be blustery, cool the first 2 days, you know, 25, 30 mile an hour winds, cool weather, some maybe a little rain, you know. So if you're fighting a bad back that's kind of stiff and conditions aren't
cool, conditions are bad.
No, they're not going to help you loosen up too much. So that'll be interesting to see if he even tees it up, first of all, which I anticipate him probably doing. But I mean, he'll struggle for a while. The conditions are going to be brutal those first 2 days.
And this is new. Do you just – maybe you miss a step? I mean, this sounds really crazy freakish.
Yeah, a little bit. But again, it was in a rental home, so you're in a new place that you never really have been. So you've only been there maybe a couple of days. So, yeah, I mean, it happens. There's weird things happen like that. You fall down the bathtub, just weird things like that, you know. Just weird that happens to the number one player that's – I don't know what the odds are, but they got to be pretty significant.
Yeah,
a couple
weeks later, are we going to find about 50 mistresses like Tiger Woods here? Kinda, you know, it was just a fire hydrant, you know, no big deal, you know, just a staircase slip.
You know, that whole thing was nuts. I was, the day that happened, I was watching and I was glued to the Colorado-Nebraska game. All right. So the rest of the field and what's this event like, Shuey? You've been down there before. You've soaked it in. And how are guys prepping? Guys that are trying to make a name, guys that are trying to kind of enhance their name.
So, I mean, it's a really unique tournament. You know, it's obviously the first tournament of the year, first major of the year. Guys are super excited about it. The Masters is a unique tournament because it is a very knowledgeable golf course. I mean, if you look at the history of the Masters year in and year out, you got the same guys always play well there for a reason. And even old guys that you would think are all washed up, all of a sudden Fred Couples comes out of nowhere. It's like he's leading the tournament. It's like, why? It's because it's a golf course that demands your knowledge, that you have to play it enough times to understand all the little nuances that are out there on the golf course presents itself and how to play all the things that are out there, the things you don't see, things you learn over time. So that's why you don't see many first-time winners over there because, again, it's too difficult of a golf course to understand all the things you have to do. You have to be on top of your game the whole time you're out there on the golf course and know exactly where you're going. And you have to be on point because you have to be pretty pinpoint. Because the greens are super small, they're very fast, very undulating, and there's only certain places you can hit the golf ball to even have chances at it, and even have chances at actually even trying to two-putt half the time or even keeping the ball on the green. You know, so you see guys like Bernhard Langer and, like I said, Fred. I mean, they're always very competitive there because, again, they have such experience on the golf course, and they know exactly where the pins are going to be. Because they keep them pretty much in the same spots, and they know how to get to those pins and where they need to play from all the time. So it's a very patient golf course, and it demands a lot of knowledge of being there. So it's going to be interesting.
Is it the best way to say it, kind of a test of your perfection?
Yeah.
I mean, without trying, you got to be perfect, but you don't have to. You can't act like you're perfect. Yeah. You can't go in with that. I got to hit the shot perfect. You do, but you can't think it.
Yeah, and it's a matter of staying patient with your game plan. I mean, the guys that have been there a lot, they know what their game plan is. They know how what you hit here, where you hit it on this hole, where you're trying to get it to. And they just stay patient with that. You know, even if they get a few over par, they stay patient with their game plan, you know, and not try to force things. I mean, you try to force things there, you fall into the trap, and it'll bite you pretty quick. So, and the weather is going to play a huge role this year because, again, it's going to be really tough the first 2 days. So it's how mentally strong are you to stay in the game, you know, to get to the weekend.
It's one more insult you probably don't need.
No. It's hard enough as it is, man. And you add the weather conditions to it, and it demands a lot of your mental capabilities.
We'll hit on Spieth and what's ahead for him with the Masters. Mike Shuhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment continues. WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Amazing membership pricing options and benefits when you become a member at Wilderness Ridge. More with Mike Shuhart on the way with Hail Varsity Masters 2017.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, winding down the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning, Mike Shuhart, WildernessRidgeGolf.com, 434-5106. If you're outside Lincoln and you're making your way to Lincoln, bring the sticks with you and get a tee time ready for you at Wilderness Ridge. Membership benefits and membership pricing with Mike Shuhart and, of course, Chris Thompson. Shuey, let's discuss the field and... You have DJ, we gave you the injury update there and how will he react and perform, but we know the conditions are going to be messy likely tomorrow and Friday, so it'll be good weather Saturday, Sunday, so you got to survive two to get to day three. What happens here? And talk to me a little bit here about Spieth. Can he kind of ride himself down in Augusta?
Yeah, I mean, obviously his track record is speaks for itself. I mean, he's got, what, 2 seconds and a first?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, he knows the golf course. He's comfortable with the golf course. You know, again, looking at the weather, I mean, it's going to play a huge factor in what happens. You know, the first 2 days are survival mode. Man, you're just trying to stay in the game and survive, make the cut, you know, put yourself somewhat in position. I mean, I anticipate that you're going to see somebody come out of the pack on Saturday and Sunday to win the tournament, you know, because it looks like the conditions on Saturday or Sunday are going to be perfect. You know, mid-70s, light winds, probably a little bit softer golf course because they have some rain. So you're going to see, you know, which bodes well for DJ. I mean, if he's good enough to play and he can just kind of make it through, you know, the first 2 days and he starts feeling a lot better, then you can let him do what he does. And he's got the power, you know. I mean, he's such a powerful player. And you got a guy like Jason Day, Peters, a foreign kid, Thomas Peters, you know, unbelievable power guy. So when the conditions start to mellow themselves out, you got Rory. Mm-hmm. It's another guy to watch out for because, again, they're going to be put into a position that they're going to have to try to make something happen, and they got conditions they're going to be ripe for it, and they can, you know. So I see somebody like that, you know, making a charge there at the end, you know. First 2 days, just survive.
Zach Johnson's a guy we talk about a lot here, and we're big Zach Johnson guys, and he's done it, obviously, before. Do you think he could, get in position again?
Oh, yeah. He's always a threat there, you know. It's just a little tougher because he just – it's – the golf course is power. I mean, and the game is power anymore. One of the keys to the Masters is you got to play the par fives really well. You know, that was what his key was when he won his first Masters, but he did it a totally different way than everybody else does. You know, he never went for a par five. So their game plan going in was there's four par fives. So he's playing 16 par fives during the week. And their game plan was to hit it to a certain number, which is basically 80 yards. So every par five, unless they could easily knock it on the green, they were hitting it to 80 yards. Well, he hit it to 80 yards. He got it up and down 15 out of 16 times from 80 yards. So he played the par fives 15 under for the week. And if you look traditionally at the Masters, the guy that plays the par fives the most under par usually wins. And that's why the power plays such a huge role there, because they can birdie the par fives, and then they survive the rest.
Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Shuey, love talking Masters. We'll recap it next week. Hour two coming up. Cedric Golden, thoughts from Bob Diaco, more of the Football Power Index discussion. Hail Varsity continues.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day!
Day by day!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We get big beat!
We get big beat!
Boom! Beat! Beat!
Boom! Beat!
Hail Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmitz and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Hour two with you, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmitz, TJ Henning, Earl Shuey, Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, still hanging out. Just so folks know, you can leave. You're free to leave. I'm not holding you against your will.
Oh, no, too fun in here.
Okay, well, he's very kind. About 20 more minutes on the Football Power Index. I'm cranked up about it. Thoughts from Bob Diaco, Dirty Bob Wednesday, and Cedric Golden coming up at 25 after the hour. We'll get caught up with Cedric on his thoughts on, you know, Bob Diaco, the Nebraska defense, and then that Lone Star State and recruiting it. Get those athletes from the great state of Texas. Now, the Football Power Index has been causing lots of reaction or some soberness with where Nebraska kind of sifts in. And Sammy McEwen, very talented with the World Herald, he put out a really good tweet about 20 minutes ago. Factors that help create this preseason Football Power Index. Now, to start the show, kind of laid out how they come to the conclusion of your record and ranking. And there's a ton of things that go into it. Your coach, what type of program are you at? How's your recruiting been? what's in the cupboard, all those things. And how have you done in the past? Are you building up? Are you trending up? Are you flatlining? Are you trending downward? And when you look nationally, if you're Nebraska, you've been at best 9-4. Occasionally, you've been pretty good at home against some top 10 teams. But you've lost some games that you're not supposed to lose based on your blue blood persona, reputation, history. And then it's been a long time since you've done anything on the road, let alone pulled off one of those upset road wins. That's just how it's been. So it all kind of feeds into this. And blindly, I'm thinking this culture under Coach Diaco can be a difference maker to keep you from 6-6, but maybe keep you at that 9-4 with your schedule or enhance it. Here's what we don't know. Don't know how the defensive transition is going to be, but you feel okay about it, at least through 10 practices, right? Not to overindulge in it, but it could be worse. There have been years where you talk to coaches away from a microphone or camera, and they're pulling the collar. You know, it's not where we need to be. And it was tempered after practice yesterday by Coach Diaco. Offensively, are you more optimistic about what you have at quarterback? That's not taking anything away from a 3.5-year starter you had. It's just fit. It's what you think fits. So those are some things. I think you can be as good or better at quarterback. And I think you can be, statistically speaking, you were a top 35 defense last year. That in your losses, three of your four losses, got decimated with the big play. Let's focus there. When it comes to future football power indexes we talk about in April, maybe Nebraska could be on the right side of this thing with a win projection total. Why? Because of the defense. Bob Diaco cut 11 here, Tej, with what his history says. If we went and did the Bob Diaco football power index, what's his history say about keeping teams out of end zones? Aaron Sorensen asked this after practice.
No, it's a great question. The main objective is to keep the points down. And the main thing that produces points is explosive plays. So we try to put the coverages together in a way to eliminate those explosive plays. And not only how we detail out our coverages, but how we call them and the call patterns and how we come in and out of coverage. One of the other main ones is explosive play runs. So we work hard on fits and pursuit, because a lot of explosive play runs are a lack of pursuit, a lack of effort, tackling, fits, and especially backside pursuit fits. So we work hard on all those things and make it a real emphasis point to work to eliminate explosive plays.
That's the how. How big plays don't happen. Details. Drilling. Repetition. Execution. Practice. Rinse, repeat. I mean, what he said right there, the question was, you know, how are your defenses historically, have they been able to slow down big plays? In turn, how do you keep teams out of the end zone? How do you give them 3 instead of 7? And that's just not a Nebraska problem. Look at the score of the national championship game. Another shootout. Do you ever think in your right mind Alabama and their defense would be in a shootout once, let alone 2 years in a row, against the same team they're familiar with? No, they were. That's how they've been beaten. Big, strong, athletic, mobile quarterbacks that can throw. Short list of guys that have gone in there and handed out tombstones, either on the national title stage or in the SEC, okay? So you got a changing world in football, where the term situational football is become more and more prevalent, but also what type of dedication are you providing in practice to stop that ugliness of the big play? And he said run. Everyone assumes it's pass. Well, Big Ten football, man, Michigan's still going to line up and punch you in the face. Ohio State, with their spread power, will line up and punch you in the face. Michigan State's going to try and do that again, get back to being them. I don't know what you thought of Indiana. They were as physical as hell as what I thought last year. Kevin Wilson seems very physical. And then you have Iowa and Wisconsin that like to roll around in mud. That's what happens. Stop the cutback. Get the backside. Take a great pursuit angle. Tackle somebody. That's how Nebraska gets more respect. That's how Nebraska gets above that 6-6 number, which I think is very likely. Again, planting my flag in April. We'll play this in December. And listen, I look at Nebraska too. Part of that why Nebraska can be better than a 6-6 projection when their history says 9-4 or worse, 5-7, 9-4, right? Those are your two options through 2 years. Well, you have culture that's being set, and part of that culture is communication and getting buy-in. And the way, this is very good from post-practice yesterday, critiquing and coaching with Diaco, cut six. Coach Diaco, it's not that he won't get in the dude's face. It's not that he won't scream and yell. It's not that he won't be very, very loud and opinionated. But it's how you say it that may get an attention, but it's what is said. And in today's day and age, my old guy voice there, you really, really got to talk to kids differently. First, you got another personality. And who's the coach's kid? Who grew up in a military family? Who can take an A-chewing, okay? And who can't? Coach Diaco.
Well, it's not instantaneous, but you got to be able to build a relationship and a player-coach relationship. I think that although you can be aggressive, attacking, and excitable, and an excitable, demonstrative coach, if you're not using disrespectful words and demoralizing words and emasculating words and dehumanizing words, if you don't communicate that way and that's not part of your DNA, then you can coach the guys. They want to be good. They want to get coached, and you build a relationship and communicate with respect and love. Being nice and telling people what they want to hear is not my version of love. Being honest and truthful and consistent and care and respect, that's the stuff that the ties that bind.
Ah, my version of love. And that's, I mean, should we jump in here? You're a coach, my man. You gotta know your kid's personality, don't you?
No question.
And to me, every stereotype I see of football, be it the old NFL films of Lombardi screaming about the seal on the Packers sweep, or talking to Coach McBride, where he'd get animated, but they knew he loved them. And it's the same way, you blow an assignment, oh my God, this no break seam defense that Diaco brings, the no crease seam, the no crease D. I'll get the term eventually right. If you mess up and you mess up his seam, he'll let you know about it.
Yeah.
But he ain't going to say things about mom and dad.
No.
Or how big your ears are. I mean, that's different.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it is trust. I mean, you got to build the trust. I mean, they got to trust what you're saying. You're just not saying it. They trust what you're saying, and there's a reason for that. It's because it works.
Because kids look at authority figures today, and it's been that way throughout history, and you have a choice to make. Is this guy or gal full of crap? And am I going to listen to them?
Yeah.
And you got to prove to them.
You do. There's no question about it.
That I know what I'm doing.
Exactly. Once you can get through that and they believe in what it is, they trust you. I mean, they trust. So they're a lot more receptive if you do get on them a little bit and you challenge them a little bit. And again, you got to, each player is so different, you know. Some you can challenge, some you can say, "You know what? Man, you got to step up your game." And other ones you got to do it a little bit different way, you know. You cuz they don't take that type of criticism and that challenge the right way, you know, because they'll beat themselves up a little mm-hmm. bit more than they need to, you know. So again,
and then it gets into the confidence issue.
Exactly.
And
how each one works at what they do, you know. Some
how do you develop that relationship? I mean, obviously spending hours upon hours together, but it's I'm just interested from a coach's perspective.
Well, a lot of it, like what I do is it's, you know, my background helps me a lot, you know, because I've been there, done it, and I've done it at a certain level, which is where,
PGA,
which is the things that they look at and they're aspiring to try to become. So it's like, well, wait a minute, the guy's already, he's been there. So obviously he has some, so that helps a little bit. And then your work with them, how you work with them, you know, so as you say, like in on the golf team, as we're working with on their golf swings and things like that, you start to talk through what it is you're trying to do and you show them some improvements, why they need to do this, some improvements that they're making. Man, you're getting there. That looks so much better. And the product starts to produce itself. And then it goes to the repetition of doing it over and over. So you start to be comfortable with it. You start to understand what it is. You start to repeat it, and it starts to produce a product. I mean, it's really easy. If I'm producing the product, man, if I hit my driver 300 dead straight every time, I mean, it's pretty easy to start believing in that because it's like, this might feel weird.
But it's working.
But it's like, wow, man, I'm just hitting it like that. I'm hitting it more solid. I'm hitting it better, hitting different shots and things like that. So that's the other trust part, too, is that because a lot of it is that you're going to tell them or try to get them to do things that it's like, man, this is different. You know, it doesn't feel – it feels weird. But let's just do this. Just do this. Sometimes humor me, man. Just do this. Because you know as a coach what it will produce if they can do it. And all of a sudden, once I can get that product – and they see that, and then they do it again, then they do it again, then it's like, man, they start to buy in because it's like, man, that's what they want. So they get over that, this is a little bit weird, doesn't feel right, you know, am I going to resist against it? Well, if it's producing what they want, it's hard to resist against it, you know. I always say it's like, it feels like you don't want it, and what you feel like you don't want will turn into something that you desire and that you look for. So it's just getting through that little stage until they can start seeing what it is. And then it becomes the desirable. That's what I want. That's what I want. And then and that weird stuff goes away. You know, it's like weird and I didn't want to do it. Becomes, yeah, man, it doesn't feel so weird. It feels actually pretty good now.
Then that becomes the new normal.
Exactly.
That's Diaco. And with the buy-in and the proof and the want, I mean, all the things he hit on there with when it came to critiquing and coaching and how he connects with guys, they want it, and you saw an effort and an energy, and I know the energy thing's been beaten over your head, and I'm sorry about that, but it is so true, and it's just noticeable, and granted, it's spring, but a lot of times it's like, oh, God, it's spring. I mean, yeah, Searles. Searles like, yeah, spring sucked. It's just, let's go through it again, and now I'm a junior, now I'm a senior. Oh, God, another spring. Well, it's new for these guys, and the way it ended last year, they don't want it to ever go that direction again. A guy that did do it and has done it is Kyron Williams. And where's he been? He's not been running with the top units. Jacob Bedilla asked him, Coach Diaco, about it last night. And good explanation here.
If we could not have a depth chart in the spring, we would. You'd have trouble organizing your practice because no one would know where to go or when to go on the field. We'd like to not talk about that. And Coach Riley's in charge of all personnel decisions. But just in general, Kyron's doing a wonderful job. And he's been very coachable. He's trying to become a great teammate or a good teammate and get better. And he's going to be good enough, and not only mentally and intangibly, but also with his skill set to participate on defense for sure.
That means you're used to starting, now you're not. How are you reacting to it? Are you helping the young pups getting there? And also, do you understand what's going on? Maybe, maybe not. I'm inferring. A 6-month premium subscription, yours right now to HaleVarsity.com. Caller, TJ says caller 4, as in get out of sight of my tee shot. Caller 4 right now, 466-3776. Inside info, recruiting news, message board, community, HaleVarsity.com. Caller 4 right now, 466-3776. Caller 4, 466-3776. Said Golden next.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HALE to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back at it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's talk some football, some golf, some NBA, all things with Cedric Golden, at Ced Golden on Twitter, Austin American Statesman, columnist, Heisman voter. And you got to check his podcast out on Second Thought. You can log on and do that, statesman.com. Ced, what's good, man? How are you?
Chris, man, it sounds good to hear your voice, man. How's it going?
Going well. We're in the midst of spring football practice. Number 11 is tomorrow in Lincoln, and there's a ton of excitement, and you know, spring game tickets are doing what they do this time of year. How about yourself? A ton of intrigue with Texas football, I'd assume.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I was out at spring football practice yesterday at the Longhorns Bridge practice, pretty physical. They let us watch like the first 15 to 20 minutes, and then I guess they get down to the state secrets. But Tom Herman's promoting toughness and physicality, and he wants a tough-minded bunch. Nothing wrong with that, especially when you consider that Texas is coming off three straight, seven-loss seasons. That's never happened in school history, and it's the worst trend. And I think they started playing football here in like 1890, so that's like 5 years after the slaves got released. So it's been a long, long time since Texas football has been this bad, and Tom Herman's looking to shape things up and get things back where they're supposed to be.
You know, and expectations in Texas extremely high. How's Coach Beck fitting in down there?
Tim Beck's doing a phenomenal job. That's basically getting his guys excited, you know, and when you're trying to change a culture, Chris, you got to get those coaches in. First and foremost, you got to get those coaches to get those players to buy in. And he's got to have a lot of talent on this offense. And I know you guys are no stranger to him. I know he was at Nebraska as a coordinator, but a couple of really young quarterbacks in Sam Ellinger and college football. If you don't have a good quarterback, and you're not going to win. The big thing that he's got to do is figure out a way to replace Deontay Foreman, who ran for over 2,000 yards last year. So he's got a lot of weapons. We both know his success with J.T. Barrett, Cardale Jones, winning a national championship his time in Nebraska. You have 3 or 4 years. You guys are among the best in the Big 12 conference, averaging over 30 points a game, as I remember. I just think that he's got to find a guy like a Deontay Foreman, like an Amir Abdullah, somebody like that who can come in and get you those hard yards, which will make things so much easier on these young quarterbacks.
Cedric Golden with us, Hail Varsity Radio, talking some spring football. And you can find Cedric on Twitter at Ced Golden, Austin American Statesman, columnist. And his podcast is must listen to for all football fans and all sports fans. On Second Thought is the name of that podcast. Cedric, you mentioned culture change. That's going on at Nebraska. And you cover Texas and all things in the state of Texas. But also you keep your eye on the national scene. And I know you know a bit about Bob Diaco, his reputation when he was at Notre Dame, kind of where they ascended to. And I'd like to kind of get your take on, from SEC and Big 12 country, you know, what Nebraska can get with a guy like Diaco.
Well, when you look at it, you're in the Big Ten now, and you got to stop people. The cold weather games, it gets. You know, for running football teams is at a premium. And, you know, we both talked about Tim Beck. I mean, those Ohio State teams that won, they weren't very good. And in the passing and receiving game,
right?
They were run-heavy type teams. So Nebraska bringing in somebody like Bob Diaco, I mean, he's in there for one reason and one reason only, and that's to stop teams like Nebraska. Now, the Notre Dame thing was pretty good for a while, in 2012. I thought that they were probably the best defense in the country. They're only giving up like 13 points a game, but then they got blown up in the BCS title game. But, you know, Alabama does that to a lot of people. But I like the hire because hard-nosed, run-stopping type defenses can get you far in the Big Ten, where it's one of those, you know, the SEC, Chris, like two or 3 or 4 years ago was a run-heavy type conference dominated by running backs. But if you look at it in the last couple of years, teams just started throwing the football around. Alabama threw the football around. Clemson and the ACC throwing the football around. But if you look in the Big Ten, and running still the stars in that league. And so when you bring in a defensive coordinator like Diaco, he's coming in to stop the run. But Derrick James, you look at the pass. You look at Michigan, you look at Michigan State, you look at Penn State. Maybe Penn State throws it around a little bit more than most, but Michigan and Michigan State, those teams are still very predicated on getting those tough 9 yards. And that's what Nebraska is going to be up against. And that's why they brought in Diaco. They think that Diaco can come in and solidify this defense.
Cedric Golden talking college football with us, Hail Varsity Radio. As Cedric, let's get your thoughts on Tony Romo. As he is off to do TV. What's your take covering the Cowboys like you do on Romo's legacy as a Cowboy? What do you think of when you think of Tony Romo?
Well, first of all, Romo's it's been my time today. I think Tony Romo will come back and play. I listened in for an hour on his conference call with CBS with Sean McManus on yesterday, and Romo just sounds like a guy that's doing what he thinks is the right thing, but I think his heart in a year or so is going to push him back into the game. I still think he believes he's got some football left in him. CBS is going to throw all the money at him, and I'm not sure why they just boots Phil Sims out of the number one broadcast booth for a guy that's never done it. I just think that's just a little over the top, but I think Romo's probably going to come back. If he doesn't, he'll go down as the fourth. I'm thinking the fourth or fifth best quarterback to play for the Cowboys. Starlock and Aikman, 1 and 2. He can compete with third with Danny White. But Danny White won 5 playoffs, and Tony Romo only won 2. Danny White led the Cowboys in 3 straight NFC championship games, and he did for replacing a legend in Roger Staubach. And Tony Dorsett was on the back end of his career. So I give Danny White a slight edge. Romo was great, brought the Cowboys back to relevance. The Cowboys were not a championship contender under his watch, and it had to be tough for him to watch Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott wreck shop last year while he was over on the sideline with a team that was really built for his skill set.
I thought about last year a lot with him. Uncle Andy, I always give him a shout out when I have you on because he's the biggest Cowboy fan I know, my brother-in-law. And he, Romo was such a good teammate, and that is so rare in pro sports, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. He was a good teammate. He represented the Cowboys well. Probably, I talked to a few writers that are closer to him than I am. He wasn't as great in the community as he could have been in Dallas. Like Jason Witten is like maybe the most charitable Cowboy ever. He's not in that category, but as far as representing the franchise and being the face and not ever doing anything to put the organization in a negative light, I think Romo was tops. And I think he would do a really good job of calling games with Jim Nance. I don't think he's going to be as good as Phil Sims or Chris Collinsworth or Troy Aikman, but he'll do a good job until he can just fight off that bug to come back. And in my opinion, I still think he's going to play again.
I think you're probably right. Cedric Golden, couple more minutes with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Cedric, your thoughts is, I know it's off season, but camps will get rolling here in a little bit. Malik Collins, Nebraska product, how do you think year two will suit him, and do you have a Randy Gregory update at all?
We talked so much about Randy Gregory, and it's just sad how bad it came. And I think the Cowboys are just associating with him. Jerry Jones, like a grandfather of sorts to some of these guys, is really still in the Randy Gregory camp. I think he wants Randy Gregory to come back and be a Cowboy, or at least suspended for a year. Yet another violation of the substance abuse policy. Sometimes you got to cut bait, and I believe in second chances, but when you start to add up third and fourth chances, you start to go, okay, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? So I think there's just enough good players in the league where you can move on. Malik Collins is, I think, really capable of being their run stuffer. They're going to need him to be a couple of times last year. They just got gashed and weren't able to hold the point of attack, particularly with teams are smart enough to try to get Sean Lee out of the middle of the defense and left it all up to those guys inside. I like his upside. He's cheap for the Cowboys, and it's a defense that's going to be bad, I think.
Okay.
You don't lose five starters from a defense that was middle of the pack and expect to move up. I mean, Barry Church, Brandon Carr, Mo Claiborne, those guys are all gone. The only bright spot on that defense right now that we know can get it done is Sean Lee at middle linebacker. And this was his first healthy year in like three seasons. So I think it's going to be a rebuilding year for that defense. And, you know, that's going to be fine because we know the Cowboys are going to be able to put up points with the best of them. So I expect them to be in some high-scoring contest.
Said lastly, what's the most attractive trait for coaches when they come invade or recruit in-state for Texas high school players? A lot of quarterbacks, Nebraska's eyeing a few. Why do folks love Texas so much? Kind of an easy question, I understand, but mm-hmm. you're in it. Tell me why folks drool like they drool.
It's easy. Athleticism. It's the athleticism that you got guys fought just growing on trees in the state. Houston, Dallas, big time defensive ends, quarterbacks, 7-on-7 has basically been the one thing that changed the game for high school football in Texas. When I was growing up, Chris, you played football in the fall and you played baseball in the summer. Now they play football for basically all year round, and that's really, really tightened up and made it such a hotbed for quarterbacks and receivers. Look in the NFL. There's like 12 quarterbacks in the NFL that are from the state of Texas. That's a lot of quarterbacks and just as many receivers. So, and it's because of the great athleticism. Kids grow up playing football in this state at 8. They start them off at like age 6. But these kids are playing tackle football at age 6 and age 7. And so by the time they get to high school, strutting on a helmet and some pads is second nature. And with the great amount of athletes you have in the state competing against one another, that kind of raises the bar in recruiting circles. And that's why you see all these SEC teams and Big Ten teams that are starting to poach these Texas kids. Growing up, these kids, guys like me, wanted to stay in state. The kids now are not afraid to leave these borders and go out of state. And that's why you see so many great Texas players on teams that are outside of Texas.
Cedric Golden with us, Austin American Statesman, at Ced Golden on Twitter. Give him a follow and check out his podcast on Second Thought. Can find that on statesman.com. Ced, we'll do this again, man. Always appreciate it.
All right, brother. Take care.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Doug Davis with us. Dr. Doug, how you doing?
Doing pretty good, Chris. Enjoyed that Final Four. That was a lot of fun to watch that.
Final Four was great. The championship game we spent time talking about on Tuesday.
Well,
a little tough to watch, right?
There's stuff to criticize.
Yeah, there's stuff to talk about for sure. Listen, let's stick with basketball. And this guy was in the championship game at one time in his career, Derrick Rose, now at the Knicks, and once an MVP, and now another season lost due to injury, a left meniscus tear for Derrick Rose. Dr. Doug, let's spend a little bit of time today on Derrick Rose for our Jock Doc. 4 knee-related season enders for him since 2010-2011.
Yeah, he's definitely had one of the more storied injury careers, you know, in the NBA. And this one being his left knee is a new meniscal problem for him. The two previous meniscal injuries were in the right knee. So this is his knee that he had torn the ACL on back, I think it was 2011, and now he's got a meniscus tear.
How can that keep happening to a guy?
Well, actually, I'm not surprised at all that it's the left knee where the ACL was. I was a little surprised when he injured the right knee, but the reason for that is because when an ACL injury happens, there's about 40 to 50% of the time where the meniscal cartilages are noticeably damaged. Now, they may not need to have anything done to them. They may have been just contused. But when we're in there doing an ACL reconstruction, we'll see that there's been damage to the meniscus. That damage will then, at times, completely heal up, but other times it will be a scenario like this where it comes back, you know, 4 or 5 years later and shows up as a tear that has progressively developed in the knee. And unfortunately, biologically, we haven't figured out ways to completely stop that from happening.
Dr. Doug Tavis, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Derrick Rose and his torn meniscus and his injury history. Dr. Doug, a guy that has four knee issues is brutally done to him with just trying to do his thing, and that's be good to the rim, make a move, pull up for a jumper, get to the paint or get to the line. And it's just got to be heartbreaking for him. With Rose, just from watching and seeing his recovery time, this isn't a new road for him having to bounce back. But when you look at age and plus mileage on this, could this be career-ending for him?
I doubt that it'll be a career-ending injury, but, you know, you never saw the Derrick Rose of his MVP season, even after he came back from the ACL.
Right.
And I think that, especially given the length of time that it has taken him to come back from some of these, he really plays it pretty tight when it comes to not wanting to be back until he feels 110%. And so, you know, he may make a personal decision not to come back. But my guess would be that he's back, but not playing at the level that he was even playing at in, you know, last year, which was pretty darn good.
Let's talk about this meniscus. What's next for him, and what's next from a surgical standpoint?
Yeah, so the majority of time when we see a meniscus that tears years after an ACL injury, most of the time those are tears that are requiring a resection of the meniscus, so a partial removal. When the meniscus is repaired, it's because it's torn in a spot where the blood flow is good enough to where we can get scar tissue to actually heal. But these tears that are associated with ACL injuries in a delayed manner like this usually are not that kind of tear. So probably a straightforward knee scope with a simple meniscectomy, and it's probably a relatively rapid recovery given or in comparison to the kinds of things that he's gone through in the past.
When it comes to explosiveness and lateral quickness, is this the I mean, they're all important, but specifically the meniscal area, is that what can be debilitating for an athlete, or can they get back to a form of what they used to be?
Yeah, I think that actually he could come back to feeling like he's got that degree of explosiveness, but it'll be for a limited time, predictably. Mm-hmm. The loss of the stress absorption in the knee that occurs with loss of part of the meniscus eventually takes its toll on the athlete. And as a for instance, he may, you know, reasonably come back and play well next year, but within the years after that, I doubt that he would be able to maintain that kind of level of activity.
If you were to do the math, how many hours of rehab do you think Derrick Rose has done?
Well, I would imagine that he's been able to keep two or three rehab people busy over the course of these last several years. I don't know. That'd be a ton.
Yeah, and that's what's sad about it is, you know, an MVP and then you have knee injuries. Let's talk about his future in the NBA. He's a free agent to be, but he's missing another season due to knee issues. And age-wise, I don't have his birth date in front of me, but he's got to be early 30s. What do you think he can bring to a team? I mean, you've done the sports medicine side of it for such a long, long time, but you've also been in organizations before too, where they've come to you about players.
Yeah, he's probably going to be in a scenario where the team that picks him up needs to recognize that he's not going to be out there every night or even close to that, or putting in the kind of minutes that they typically would expect from a starting point guard scenario. He brings a lot of experience. He's going to be able to help bring along younger players, and there's still going to be a lot of value for him. But he's going to be a guy who's limited in the minutes and taking nights off in the future, and that's going to really, as a free agent, it's going to hamper his negotiations. There's no doubt about that.
Dr. Doug was wondering real quick too, how long, when you do a procedure on a meniscus, does it take to perform?
Well, in the scenario where the meniscus is just partially removed, which is what I suspect would occur in this case, he could potentially be back playing pretty well in a 6 to 8 week time frame, maybe even earlier than that. If it's a repairable scenario, well, then he's back to where he was in 2013, I believe, and he could miss even a significant part of next season.
Dr. Doug Davis, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Doug, we'll do this again. Thanks for a few minutes.
You bet, Chris. Have a great rest of your week.
The saga of Derrick Rose will wind down a Wednesday. Hail Varsity, back with you shortly, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Former black shirt, Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
We just start right away and make a big emphasis of it. We believe in some core principles, not only tactically, but also intangibly. Just a mindset. We try to pound it home, and the guys rally around it and have a lot of fun with it.
It's that red zone mindset. As TJ Henning says, it is a lifestyle. Or is that Nebraska ball?
It can be, but it could be for that as well.
The red zone mindset. Part of that culture. Part of the reason the football power index may be different a year from now when we're talking about it. When it comes to Nebraska projections. Bob Diaco and quarterback play. Unknowns, question marks, strikes against Nebraska when you come in number 58. I mean, I guess you're not last in the Big Ten, but you're behind Minnesota, behind Iowa, behind Northwestern, behind Wisconsin. You're fourth. You got Illinois by a nose, and then Purdue. Hey, but at least you have a 77% chance to beat Purdue. Almost as good as an 81% chance to beat South Alabama. And your chances of losing to Ohio State, way worse than losing to Penn State, 5% to 7.5%. Blow this thing up, make it a poster, and put it next to the picture of Sue in the locker room.
Yeah,
or
motivation.
Or weight room.
Mm-hmm.
Every bit helps. Funny story about motivation. Aaron Babcock told me this. Hale Varsity owner, operator, phenomenal photographer. He was working for Nebraska. And Nebraska had lost to Stanford in the Super Regionals. The previous year, Nebraska went to the College World Series for the first time under Van Horn. And as you walked in to the Husker baseball locker room, there's a giant picture of Stanford celebrating on their home pitching mound to get back to the CWS. And as a Nebraska baseball player under Van Horn, you need to walk into the clubhouse.
See that every day.
See that every freaking day. and then go get ready.
Yeah, that'd make you want to go to work.
Or kind of like 18 to 16 on the old scoreboard during the summer of 94. Now, I don't know where the ESPN.com football power index rates to actual events.
Enhance. Yeah. Enhance, blow it up.
Just put old 58. Just not your number, 58. Hey, who is the Caputo? Caputo will roll in for the spring game and think everyone loves him. There's number 58 everywhere. No, it ain't for you, even though you're a good dude. It's for the Football Power Index. If it wasn't for disrespect, wouldn't have any respect at all. Maybe they go major league with this thing. I don't know. Tomorrow at 4, Coach DiNardo will be with us. Take care.